For the ones who know safety isn't a catchphrase, it's a culture. And the ones who help make sure everyone makes it home safe. For the safety-minded who watch everyone's backs, Grainger offers supplies and solutions for every industry, as well as safety assessments and training to keep your facilities safe and your people safer. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
All right, people, let's go. Block Party's out. I'm your host, Mike Wall. Thanks for watching. If you're enjoying, please subscribe, rate, and review on our YouTube channel, Process to Perform. You can hit me up at MikeWall68 on X or Twitter. Or you can hit me on Process to Perform on Instagram. I'm sure there's a TikTok somewhere, but I don't really use it. Show is sponsored, as always, by Bet Online. Bet Online is your number one source for all your summer sports needs, from Major League Baseball, golf, the NBA, and NHL playoffs as well. All the latest stats, news, and scores available to follow your favorite teams. Get the latest odds and lines, including the latest team matchups, player props, and odds on just about every sport out there. So head to the website today or use your mobile device to get in on the action. Bet Online, where the game starts. And again, we're in this kind of doldrums of the NFL. I know that I think the Packers are doing some OTAs, and there's some teams are doing some OTAs right now. It's interesting, actually. If you look at it from my side, where I'm working with some players, you know, the difference in intensity, the difference in volume with some of the different OTA practices as far as what they're doing, how many team practice reps they have, et cetera. It is kind of interesting. It's certainly more than we ever used to do. And that's going to be our topic today, because the NFLPA has now come out and said, we want to fundamentally change how we structure the offseason. I'm going to read a quote from NFL.com, because this stuff is actually, there's a couple levels to this that I think are interesting. They've been talking about it for about two decades now, but they're actually going to move on it after, you know, years and years and years of kind of going the other way. So here's the quote. NFLPA is working to finalize a proposal to overhaul the offseason starting as soon as 2025, eliminating voluntary on-field work in spring in favor of a longer training camp ramp up, with players reporting in mid-June to early July. NFL insider Tom Pelissero reported Tuesday per sources informed of the plan. Key words there: eliminating voluntary on-field work. Okay, so why is that important? In the off-season, your head coach is going to say, hey, off-season program starts April 1, and it goes until June 17, let's say. And here's our OTAs, here's our mini camps, here's the voluntary, here's the stuff we want you have to be at. If you're not there, depending on the program, if you're not there, because the coaches have hours during the day, they can classroom, they can work with you on the field. So if you're not there, like, the coaches don't care if you're working out somewhere else. Everybody prefer you to see what you're doing. It's always nice to be able to stick your head into the weight room and see if a guy's working out. But as far as being able to work with them, if they're not allowed to work with the players, then the head coach isn't going to really care if they're in Green Bay, if they're in South Florida, because in South Florida, they have the House of Athlete and a bunch of Bomberinos and all that, where you can work out with all of these different athletes from all over the country and really get, you know, very, very high-end training that is specific to you. You might not be able to necessarily get that at the facility, only because if there's 100 guys in the weight room and there's 4 to 5 strength coaches in it plus interns, that's really tough to, like, you know, manage each individual player. Like, what do you need the most? So we've kind of gone through that before, but this is interesting because the only way to get rid of that pull, like, the players feel obligated to show up because it could affect their contract talks. For some of the players, it could affect whether or not they make the team. you know, like I remember John Fox was very adamant that he didn't want players that weren't in the offseason program to be captains on his teams, which affected me, by the way. So a lot of this stuff, they need to write it in and like, we're not going to be part of this at all. Otherwise, there'll still be that pressure coming in. They've been talking about this for decades. Why not have a longer offseason and then have a ramp up period that is more suiting to the rigors of an NFL season? Like, in other words, why take 2 months off between June and the end of July, or a month and a half off, instead of using that as a ramp up period to actually be ready for the season? Here's kind of the weird thing that's going on right now. Many of you undoubtedly are going to wonder why the NFLPA would bring up something like this to the negotiating table right now, knowing full well that Roger Goodell and his company want to extend the season by another game to the 18th season. Like, why would you put a negotiating chip on the table that this would not be a like for like deal? So if they said, okay, like if you went to the owners today and said, hey, we'll give you an 18th game, but you got to give us back this offseason from April 1 to, let's say, June 20th. We don't want to be in the building anymore. They'd go, okay, deal, because they don't care at all. Here's the problem. Let me explain the problem with an 18-game season. Even the 17-game season they have right now, plus an added playoff game. And I'm not talking about for the fans, because I'm sure the fans want all the content they can grab, and I understand that. But think about it from an athlete perspective, and think about it from a quality of play perspective, because I think at some level, you got to start caring about that as well. There is a risk-reward scale that you generally live by, okay? It just like it, and I could liken it to how stupid this camera is that sometimes goes out. What's the risk for me to go buy another one that it works just as poorly as the last two? I don't know. But there's a risk-reward scale you generally live by. Like, for example, if I want to go cliff diving, I want the reward of the exhilaration of going cliff diving. I don't want to risk that I belly flop and like get sick for the next 2 days. If I want to ride a bull, I'm also might be afraid of what happens when he starts bucking. So we do these things that are really exciting where we want to, but we don't know if the reward's worth the risk. Professional athletes at every level are always battling with that risk reward. And I think for, you know, a lot of the guys, the reasons that they're successful, men and women, are because they can kind of tamper or lower or change the profile of the risk reward in their mind, like maybe more so than the general population. Athletes are getting paid in part because they're willing to do stuff that other people aren't willing to do. Like boxing Mike Tyson, or, you know, going up on a half pipe and trying to pull a 10E on a skateboard. Most people aren't going to go, you know what? I'm going to train. I'm willing to put myself through the training for 4 to 6 months that it takes to do either one of those things. Oh, and then I actually got to go do it in front of a million people, especially like the boxing thing, you know, two men enter, one man leave deal. You don't, that goes against the risk reward profile of the general population. And that's why in part we love to watch athletes, because they're willing to do things we're not willing to do, or they're able to do things we're not willing to do. Football players are now making more money than I think anyone ever thought they would. And I think that's a fantastic deal. But we've talked about it before, that the high-priced guys now are making maybe 5x of what they used to make, like 20 years ago, not that long ago. I'm talking about the highest paid guys in the league are making somewhere between, you know, 4 and 5 times what they used to make, you know, 20, 25 years ago. And with that extra income, because that's, you know, you think about that versus like, you know, a teacher's salary, a banker's salary, any, like almost any other profession, the risk profile changes because that's gone up so much more than everything else. So the amount of money that would be generated and sent directly to every player's pocketbook if they added an 18th game is not going to justify the additional wear and tear, the additional risk of playing one extra game plus potentially an extra playoff game. For quarterbacks, that might be worth it because their risk profile is different. They don't get hit as much, blah, blah, blah. I mean, it's not a violent, you know, kickers, quarterbacks, it's not a violent part of the sport. But you start talking about anybody who's involved in actual confrontation, that risk-reward profile doesn't make really any sense. And then you'll also hear about guys saying, And depending on who you are, where's that extra money go? Well, it goes to the top paid guys. It doesn't go to like league minimum is probably not going to change because they changed this one rule or add an 18th game. It might change a little bit, but you know, that money is really going to go somewhere else. So for a lineman, running back, or a safety, it's the extra games don't add up to extra seasons. So you're running out of rope come the end of the regular season now as it is. Like by 17th week, I guess it's week 18 now, you're exhausted already. Physically, you're beat up. You're taped together at some part of your joints. And the idea of adding an extra game so you can make kind of a marginal amount more in your weekly check versus playing another multiple, couple extra seasons. Like, it's not the cumulative effect that one game is going to have over 12 years. It's the cumulative effect that an 18th game would have over that season in particular. Now, it does have a cumulative effect over the course of your career, but you just like at, your start week one, training camp's the last day you feel nice, feel good about yourself, feel like physically. Week one, you're okay. Week five, you're hurt. Week eight, you're tired. Week 12, you feel like, dog crap. Week 17, you're hoping that you're in the playoffs. Otherwise, you're ready to be done. Now there's an 18th game. More people get it hurt. So if you are potentially eliminating, or reducing the profile of my career, because guys now want to play longer would rather play longer at 80% than having a shorter career at like 90-95%, because the money's just so different now, like the profile changes. So what do? You risk, reducing your career from like 12 years to 8 years so you can play one extra game? Doesn't make any sense for the players. It makes a lot of sense for the fans. Makes a lot of sense for the owners who have zero risk profile here. It makes no sense for the player. So just put it in perspective this way. If you're a veteran player who's a good player, you're probably making somewhere between non-quarterbacks, $10 to $25 million a year. What could possibly be important enough, or what amount of money would be enough to go, I'm going to add a game and potentially lose a season or two seasons or three seasons? Because the more games you play, the more games you have to get through, the greater the chance you getting injured. So why put this on the table now? And I think there's three reasons. Number one, and this is what you hope, hopefully the NFLPA is saying, listen, this is off the table as far as concessions for an 18th game. Now, the NFLPA has used time at the facility before as a bargaining chip for when they were revenue share. When they lost in revenue share, they're like, oh, we want our, we don't want our centers to have to touch a football for 2 months, or we don't want to do X, Y, and Z. So that was like the DeMaurice Smith, that group, Jeff Saturday, that was that group that was negotiating time in the building for like part, potential revenue share issues. I think that the new NFLPA director, Lloyd Howell Jr., I think he's going to not make the same mistake that D. Smith made. I just repeatedly made, I should say. Like, I don't think that's it. So I think that's off the table, number one. Number two, this is being presented as a longer offseason paired with a longer ramp-up period to the actual season. So from a training perspective, this could actually make way more sense. I'll quickly explain why. Right now, you get to the end of the offseason program. It's like June 17th. And then every player is in as good a shape as they're going to get as far as the team's concerned. They've been training for, 8 to 12 weeks, running 8 to 12 weeks, light field work for 8 to 12 weeks as far as like not in pads. So there's a level of physicality you can't reach. So most guys, like most coaches are probably going like, man, I really feel good about the way Mike looks on June 17th. Let's just hope that wherever he goes after this and for the month and a half that he's gone, that he comes back in better shape, or at least as good shape as he's in right now. But a lot of guys, even still, aren't using that time in a manner that would be fortuitous for them to maximize their abilities come July, August, September, October, etc. So that gap period, a lot of guys get detrained because unless you're doing football stuff, it's hard to do football stuff. Like unless you're with the group, it's hard. So you can get in great shape. You can get stronger. You can get faster. But as far as like being able to go out, maybe work on your, some of your technique or doing some team stuff, as far as bringing everybody together from a team perspective, and to some extent from a player perspective, I understand why you would want to have a longer ramp up period. And we discussed this all the time back in Miami, have a longer ramp up period and give them 4 months, if that's what they want, of time off, February, March, April, May, give them 4 months off and let them go to their private facilities and go train. Because from a coaching perspective, you're going to get, it's like you're starting training camp mentally, you know, 4 to 6 weeks earlier. So you're going to get that many more reps in that actually matter. They're not going to forget all that information. So I think that makes a ton of sense from a team perspective. And that is where I think the NFLPA understands, well, the players aren't going to mind this because you're probably reducing the actual time in the building. Like if they start mid-June, early July, then it's only really another, you know, what are we talking, 3-4 weeks, really? Versus like 8 to 12 that they're doing right now. And the team is going to probably say, you know what? I'd rather have that 4 weeks pre-training camp to make sure we're good on all our schemes, especially think about the Packers right now, installing a new defense. Is it easier for Halfley to go in and install for 4 or 5 weeks, 3 to 4 to 5 weeks, right before training camp starts and then hit the ground running? Or is it smarter to install right now, stop June 17th, take a month and a half off where he doesn't see anybody, and then have to reinstall that all over again? Like it's, you know, it's simple math, right? So if the NFL is smart, they'll use that as the, oh, this is what you guys actually want from a coaching perspective. And then two, if they're smart, putting this in place, this idea could have long-term benefits when it comes to lengthening the season. Because if you get January until June off, February until June off, 2 months after they do now, they come back for preseason work in June, 1 week off for the 4th of July, 2 more weeks they roll into training camp. And we know, you know, training camp shortened than years past. This puts the real, like the season, like how long am I at the building? I'm in the building from June until February, if things go well. International soccer, for example, is like a 10-month season. Okay. I know the wear and tear is certainly different in football than it is in soccer. It would be difficult to ask a football player to spend more than 8 months playing in a row playing football. So in other words, I think the NFLPA could also be looking at this and saying, we'll come in for a month, month and a half of ramp up, but then there's no way we're extending because I'm not going to start in June. And then you're going to ask me to finish later in February. Like another, every week now is just another week that we're in the building, banging our heads against one another, all of that. And you're like, well, Mike, they're already doing this time. Yeah, but it's not consecutive. Like they don't get a break. And that's always been the argument from players, I think, before now, is like, we need that break to like recharge our batteries. And I think you'd use that 4th of July week to do that. We need that break to recharge our batteries so we can go in and give this our all. But I think what they're figuring out is players understand that some of the best training they're going to get is outside of the organization. They're going to go to their private facilities. They're going to go back to their colleges. They're going to get a little bit more personalized training. They're going to go work with other guys in the league, work on their very, very specific technical skill, you know, learning how to watch all the, you know, tape, learning how to read different defenders, all that stuff that you learn when you're with your peer group. They're going to go continue to go do that. And they're going to spend more time doing that. They're going to have more, they're going to have kind of a better schedule to do that because they don't have, they do that for February through June. And then they go, okay, now we're done for this off. Now the season starts really in June. Let's go do this ramp up period. Yeah. We're not going full speed, but we're going to be in the classroom every day. We're going to be training. We're going to do all this stuff. So I think that would help on so many levels, the NFLPA. I think it would help players on so many levels. It's a little bit daunting to think about getting rid of that summertime and adding kind of a 6 week or five, you know, 5 to 6 week profile of training right dirt with the team right before, but you see the benefits from a mental standpoint of not having to reinstall that scheme twice. So I'll be kind of interesting to see how that plays out. The other kind of thing that's going on in Green Bay, potentially, the talking point is that Jordan Love is up for a contract. He's set to make around, I think, $11 million this season, going into his fifth year. The rumors extended that, the rumors that he could be extended for Trevor Lawrence. What is he going to get? Joe Burrow money? You know, somewhere between potentially $50 to $55 million annually. And I know it's fun to peg his salary to someone else. Like, okay, maybe he's Joe Burrow money. Maybe he's Deshaun Watson money. Maybe we wait and see what Trevor gets. And maybe Trevor, are they similar? Like, what's the record there? You know, how does that play out? What should the contract look like if you're trying to win over the long term for Green Bay? But here's the truth. And, you know, everybody, after the ESPN flashes and, you know, if Schefter reports it, and it doesn't really matter. Like, there's not a contract they're going to come up with that it would hamstring the Green Bay Packers forever. There's not a contract that they come up with that is not going to be insignificant. And really, in 2 to 3 years, the money's going to be irrelevant compared to the market, right? Except that he's, you know, for the rest of us, he's making an absolute dump truck full of money, right? That he's earned through his play. For those who point to Trevor Lawrence, they point to Joe Burrow's contract that's current. Who cares? Because, like, I'll give you just my personal example. For like 2 weeks, I was the highest paid guard in the National Football League. And then Brian Waters he was a Kansas City Chief All-Pro. He went to the contract guy in Kansas City. He's like, you just handed him my contract, said, I want this contract. Okay. That was it. You know, it's over like that, right? And the next year, Steve Hutchinson, who's a Hall of Famer, went back and just blew the doors off everybody's contract and started earning like what we back then called Larry Allen money, because Larry Allen was basically being paid tackle money. So all of that stuff happens. Like, Penei Sewell just blew the doors off the, as a right tackle, blew the doors off the tackle market by $3 million less than 2 years after Tunzel signed for $25 million. Sewell signs for 28 annually. So you just start, like, the money is, it's funny money now. And maybe it's fun to talk about, but like, as it really pertains to the cap and the team over the long term, it doesn't really matter. I mean, the money's going up almost parabolically right now, especially for prime positions like quarterback, left tackle, et cetera. The only question you have to answer is, if you're a GM, is this guy good enough to win us games, or do we have to win games despite having this guy? Is he good enough to win us an extra? Can we look at the schedule and go, our quarterback is good enough to win us this game? He's going to have to win us these two games. If you have a guy you think will win you a couple games every year, you're in the minority. Like, how many quarterbacks could you count on for maybe two wins above average next season? 15th ranked top guy. So in other words, if you said, I have this guy and I'm going to pull whoever I think is the top 15, 16 ranked quarterback in the league, who's kind of a good player, not great player. How many guys are going to give you two wins over him? Same team, same situation. Here we go. I got Jackson, Mahomes, Burrow, CJ Stroud. I got Jared Goff. I got Josh Allen. I go maybe Dak. I got maybe Trevor Lawrence. I got Brock Purdy. Maybe. I have maybe, you know, are we saying Justin Herbert talent-wise, but hasn't added up yet? Carr, maybe. So Jordan Love is in that conversation, but we're not talking about a lot of guys. So if he's in that conversation, and the answer is yes, whether he makes like Mahomes' contract or Burrow's contract, doesn't really matter. Remember when Mahomes signed his $500 million deal? Like, no one's asking for that contract right now because the money's gone up. It didn't take very long. And when he signed that thing, everyone's like, oh my God. And then you look at it and you go, you know, it's going to be cap friendly in 3 years. And it is, comparative to the market, because the money's going up parabolically. So it changes so fast. It's like, don't worry about, it's fun to peg it. I mean, for some people it's fun to peg it, but the reality is 2 years, it's not going to matter anyways. Just be happy you got a guy that can win. If you got a guy that can win you two games over average, that's it. That's the only conversation that you need to have. All right. With that said, I popped out for some listener questions. Guys, thanks for responding. I had the question, what is the biggest question mark going into training camp? Read some of these out and then, hey, give me my thoughts. One answer, defensive scheme. How difficult is it to install a new defensive scheme given the limited reps? I can't even talk. At OTAs. Good question. Okay. This is, for me, this is where film and then experience and having mentors matters the most. Can you learn without taking reps? Absolutely. Like, how much better can you get if you have film to watch, watching it with somebody who understands what you're trying to accomplish? And that's usually a player who plays your position, or it could be a player coach, it could be a coordinator, but like another, you don't have to be there. You don't have to be in that situation. There are plenty of guys that understand how to run cover three. There's plenty of guys who understand how to fill a B gap. Now, if you're talking about nuanced details, if you want to talk about how do you scout your opponent, if you want to talk about the technique you want to use, you're going to have to learn, like from a technical standpoint, what the expectations are for you, and you can rep that on your own. But really, it's, you can never watch enough tape. I mean, I guess that's the best way to put it. It's like, no matter, even if you're at this elongated period of OTAs, or they extended it so you could watch another hour of film a day, like you really can't watch enough. Like you just can't watch enough film, because when you start really watching film, you'll just, depending on the position you're in, you're going to start looking at different things. I might look at the guy across from me. Then I might look at the next level. What is the, for me, like, what is the linebacker depth or split tell me about who's coming down from the safety position, what my guy might be doing, what kind of defense they're run. I can know what set they're in, but does that tip off that they're running a specific stunt that we've seen, right? And then you move back. Okay, they're rolling coverage here. Where does that mean the pressure's coming from? You know, all of that, you just start moving back and seeing layers and layers and layers. And it's probably even more so, you know, think defensively, you're at the safety position or the corner position where you're off the ball, you're looking at the quarterback, you got eyes on. I think the more tape you watch and understand how quarterbacks try to bait you, what their pump fakes look like, what their footwear looks like when they're running, you know, certain routes, all of that stuff, it starts to build out. I mean, you started by watching the receivers. You started by watching the splits. You started by watching the formations in the splits, the releases, their breaks, any tiptoes and tendencies they have. Then you probably get to the quarterback, right? And then you start thinking about, okay, what is his footwork on this look? Does he ever throw a hitch fade on a three-step when he looks to his right? Does he always fake to his left? Does he pump fake it with two hands? All that stuff, like, you start picking it up and you have a catalog of different quarterbacks you've been working against in different teams. So I guess the short answer is you can definitely do it, but you're always going to have to put in extra time. Question, with the new strength conditioning staff, will they change anything, or is staying healthy more hope than anything else? Like, in other words, is there any magic potion that these guys can do that haven't been done before? Well, I'll say this. The last staff, and I've talked about this, like, they were as good as there is in the league as far as trying to improve the development of players while maximizing recovery and maintaining health. About 10 years ago, I think, when they started bringing in sports science guys, performance guys, there was this huge, like, cash thrown at these guys, but they were giving information to the teams that the coaches didn't really value, because some of the information contextually wasn't valuable. And then some of the information ran counter to what they wanted to accomplish. Like, if I'm trying to make you a tougher player, I got to put you under difficult situations. Well, for a while, when the guys were like, oh, he's running hot, I think the coach is going, well, good. That's like crucible time. Like, how do you get better? Or the quarterback needs to get 40 reps. If the left guard is wanting to be on the first team, he's getting 40 reps too. I don't care how tired he is. So because of all of these different things, and that is not the fault of anyone except for probably the management who brought everybody in too early and started throwing too much money at these guys, that platform became a vehicle to really help players maximize recovery. And so all these different recovery modalities and understanding, okay, you've done this today, how are we going to get you back ready for tomorrow? That probably became of primary importance. And I think that's partly the strength and conditioning staff, but that's really the whole performance staff in general now and how they work together. We're talking about nutrition, recovery, you know, everything, the AT, the PT. So sleep. So are these guys, like Christian Watson, for example, I just read somewhere he went and got tested, like University of Wisconsin or something. And they were like, oh yeah, his hamstrings are imbalanced. And so they're going to work on that. I'm like, guys, I know that's a great news. And maybe Christian Watson wasn't aware, or maybe like it's new news. He's excited about like the opportunity to be healthy. So he's talking about that. But I know the guys that were there before. I would be beyond shocked if they weren't aware that he had a hamstring imbalance and they weren't working on it. I would be, you know, I'd go out and get my car to the guy down the street. Like that doesn't make it. There's absolutely no way that's true. Okay. So a lot of this stuff is just repackaged, repurposed. There's fresh enthusiasm. And certainly when you send somebody to a specialist and they get information, sometimes, you know, you get excited about the product. Christian Watson, look, man, you're potentially a great player, but you want to be healthy. So of course you're going to be excited about any information that leads to like, oh, this is how I'm going to get healthy. So I'm just basically saying, you know, I'm sure these guys are doing stuff that's very similar to what the last group did. I think the biggest change is probably how the personality of the new staff probably fits how Matt LaFleur thinks about himself, thinks about his identity as it comes to like his team in the weight room. All of that maybe changes a little bit, because that's probably the biggest, like personality is probably the biggest factor in who you're going to hire in that situation. Over under, Isaiah McDuffie starts 10.5 games. I think Cooper's probably going to be handed the job. Injuries, who knows, but 17 games, 10.5 would be a lot of starts for him. I hope he starts 14, 15. Similar question, what's the plan with linebacker with two players playing with very similar abilities? I assume you're talking about Quay and Cooper. Quay's a bigger. I think Quay outweighs him by like, you know, 10, 14 pounds. Cooper's much more, in my opinion, off the film. Again, pros different. Cooper looks like a very instinctive player. I think he naturally gets downhill better than Quay. McDuffie is kind of a more compact guy. He plays with better leverage, but he's 227. Cooper's 230. Quay's 240. Or 230, or whatever, 238. None of these guys are what you would call... Isaiah's the closest thing you have to a thumper, okay? The other two guys aren't thumpers. So getting off the block is really when you start looking at, like, how is this going to work? You watch BC tape. You watch what Cooper's good at. You watch what Tyron Hopper's good at. They want to play down. They want to play downhill, but they're not big enough, and they're not good enough at technically for block destruction yet. That's going to be kind of the thing. Can we force running backs to go laterally so they can run away from the lineman? Because if they run downhill, I think they're going to have a hard time. Like if you run inside zone, mid zone, where these guys have to have a real confrontation. I think more often than not, like, we don't like that situation. So you're going to have to be really good in the middle, Kenny Clark and company, Wyatt and company, at clogging up those gaps and forcing running backs to bounce and forcing them to go laterally, because then it allows your linebackers to chase down new speed. Now, I think if you have McDuffie in there instinctively, he just does a better job of filling gaps early. Now, again, when you get linebackers staggered sometimes and one of them's ahead of the other, it's just like a line out in rugby. When you got different lines, you know, sometimes there's gaps in that as well. So you have to have those players playing in the same mindset. And that's going to be a real challenge, I think, for the defensive staff, something they could certainly do, but that's a coaching point. I think they're going to be harping on throughout OTAs and training camp. For against the proposed move of OTAs, is there a group that benefits from the offseason work together, you know, aside from maybe the quarterbacks and wide receivers? I would say this, everybody benefits from working together, but you know, it's like Tom Brady during COVID and before COVID, he would go out and he had his guys working together, and you know, obviously Peyton Manning, and you heard about these old, I think Russell Wilson did this or does this. I think all the quarterbacks do this now, where they'll have, certainly there was something up in Minnesota for years, where guys are getting their players together in a place that they all want to be, and they go and they talk and they hang out. Maybe they rent a house and they work and they work and they work. And it's away from the facility. So what's that mean? Well, that means that there's nobody in the room except for them that's going to tell them how they want something run. So that it's just like a one-to-one communication. And sometimes that's good, especially if you've got like a veteran quarterback and some younger players. And sometimes, maybe in the case of the Green Bay Packers, maybe you want that wide receivers coach there more because we have some fundamental problems with like route running because they're still young players. But if you've got kind of veteran guys or a veteran QB, you can tell you exactly what he wants, then going off on your own, because now you're at the gym that you probably appreciate more than maybe you do being at the facility. You're keeping your own schedule. You're, you know, all of that stuff. If it's, you know, they're not worried about like, can they afford their meals and stuff? They're, you know, going to get a free meal from the Packers. Like, guys aren't worried about that. The people I'm referencing aren't worried about that, I should say. So there's some real benefit to that being away. So I think that 4 months, like I don't think that you're going to sit here and, you know, watch the quarterbacks and wide receivers not see each other until the mid June. Now, linemen, defensive line, like, you know, Mike Flanagan and I lived near each other. We'd have guys come in and work defensive ends, different line, offensive linemen down at UNLV in that area in Vegas. But, you know, we didn't have like a summit like they have. Now they have like an O-line summit. But, you know, a lot of that is like, a lot of that is not focused on, hey, technically we're going to make you like the best player. It's like, how do you take care of yourself? You know, there's a lot of kind of introduction stuff going on there as well, I've been told. So I think all of those things are good. The tight end, you, D, I think all those things are good. And you're going to see that more if you have a longer off season compared to that ramp up. Secondary and kicking. Number one concern. Secondary and kicking game for sure. Not only kicker, but the new rules and return game. Oh, so I think this, I'm really excited to see how Rich Bisaccia uses Keyshawn Nixon in the new kickoff return, but also I think Marshawn Lloyd. When I see Marshawn Lloyd and you start talking to like some special teams guys around the league about what are the options now with guys lined up on the 35 and the returners lined up on the 30, and then you got two guys in the back, and you got, okay, because it's a little bit, they couldn't do the XFL one, so it's a little bit different with the way they can drop two guys behind the 30. Like, you could see some sparks fly, especially if you get two returners back there, and they might be more like Nixon's going to be back there, period. But you start looking at that second guy, like Marshawn Lloyd, just from an explosive standpoint, and he's 220. Because all of that confrontation could happen, you know, depending on how good these kickers are, like dropping the ball at the 19 and having it bounce, you got to pick it up. Like, a lot of this stuff is going to be maybe more how a running back sees the field than like a return guy. It could be all in one wave with one kick out block or one lead up, or, you know, it could be a line of people that looks more like a zone read than, you know, having players at all these different levels, because there's not, you know, 35 yards to navigate through different blockers if you're the kickoff coverage team. So I'm super interested to see that. Here we go. Where the defense, so one of the questions is the new defense, is that going to force kind of a slow start on the defensive side? Is the offense going to have to make up for it? Are they going to lose a couple games early because of that? And then, you know, how does that look over the course of the season? Well, here's the thing. It's a great question. What are the potential pitfalls and benefits of bringing a guy in from college? And remember, of course, that Halfley was also working as a secondaries coach for Rob Salah, I think, when he was in San Francisco. So one of the real positives for me is college football runs fast. So if you don't have a communication method that goes fast, like one word to describe a coverage, I don't think you last. So I think the verbiage and everything is going to be implemented quickly. And the hope there is that you get really, really good at a couple things early in the season. Like the hope for Halfley is like, can you install everything and be really good at everything on week one, day one? Probably not. But can you install 60 to 65, 70% of your playbook at a like elite level where they're communicating on the same page? Like communication and being on the same page is because that breeds confidence in not only yourself, but your team. That's one of the most important things you can come up with. So that's kind of the hope there for me is, can you install and run 60 to 65% of your stuff at a high, high level? And then as they start to scout you in, you know, week three, four, five, you can start learning how to disguise different looks and coverages. You can start getting a little bit better at, or maybe you can, you know, get some new plays in there as far as like, these are looks that I'm not going to show, or, you know, I was running a Mike Sam here and now I'm going to run a Sam Strong safety, but I'm going to show the same look, or I'm maybe going to bring it off the weak side instead of the strong. So there's a couple of different things that we can do. And, you know, from a defensive or offensive standpoint, there's two schools of thought. Can I show one structure where I can do like 10 different things out of, so they don't never ever know what I'm going to use? Or should I show 10 different structures that I do one thing out of, so they have to remember why I would be in that formation, alignment, etc.? So if they can see it, they'll be like, oh, they're running this. If a defense lines up in a base 4-3 and all of a sudden the Will cheats out and they always do one thing, that's easy to see, right? If he stays in the same spot and does 10 different things, that's hard for me to pick up. If they run a base 4-3, but they also run out of their base package, they run, you know, 27 different looks and I got to remember every one of them, that's hard to pick up as well. So what's easier to learn? Well, probably the easiest thing to learn is let's start in less and teach ourselves to do more with less without tipping. And then, so, you know, we'll kind of have to see how that works, but that's, you know, the pitfalls are sometimes, obviously the complexity of a pro offense is greater than most things you're going to see in college. So again, I think that benefits to, you know, have less installed and just be better at watching tape. So again, having a better understanding of what you're going to see, what the keys are from a defensive perspective, looking at the offensive line, the backfield, the receiver splits, et cetera, being really, really good at that and teaching that and taking pride in that and then being the best at the basis of, you know, block destruction and tackling, maybe more so than how much stuff can I put in a week one. And, you know, I just get the feeling that Half is going to be really good at that. It seems like from his interviews, that's what he really values. Got a couple others here. How can the new aggressive style pass rush attacking defense stop the run without over pursuing? Well, when you're playing attacking defenses, like, it's not like guys are just, you know, you hear this thing like make the tackle on the way to the quarterback. You still got to make the tackle. You still have to be, there's an awareness factor. And old man Washburn used to teach, it was a Chris Kurosek's head D-line coach when they were in Detroit. They were teaching Ndamukong Suh. So Suh would show us back in the day, you know, you put your hand in the ground and your first step, your foot's got to replace your hand. And then depending on which way your toe is pointed is based on what your first read is. So think about how fast that has to happen. So with good defensive line coaches, they are teaching some very, very subtle movements, you know, toe position to combat what they're seeing off the initial movement of the guard and the tackle, for example, the three technique. So when you start talking about this stuff, like it sometimes seems like, maybe because some guys probably are just firing off the ball and, you know, they're running a trap right past them. And that's going to happen with a really well-executed scheme at times. But with a lot of this stuff, you have to remember it's so much about details. And these guys are really, really high-level coaching and high-level playing that a good, well-coached group isn't going to just, you know, pin their ears back and give up the draw and give up the trap and give up the insides, you know. They're going to have a very, very good understanding that we can play aggressive. We're just trying to reset the line of scrimmage every time. Again, what we just talked about, make that running back go horizontal so the linebackers can get off those blocks and make tackles. Can the offensive line and quarterback continue the success they were having last half of the year, last season? If yes, I think I should relax. Okay, well, I think so. I mean, obviously losing Bakhtiari permanently is a big deal. Not understanding who you're going to have at, you know, at least two of the positions, I think is a big deal. I don't know what we've seen in OTAs, but, you know, Zach Tom's going to play. Jenkins going to play. Myers, is, for right now, probably looks like he's going to be the setter. So is the first-round draft pick, where is he going to play, Jordan? Is Walker going to be the starting left tackle or not? Are we going to give Sean Ryan the not? Like, there's – you basically have right now, without knowing the other guys, you have six players for five positions. Who's going to play out? Luckily, you could start five that you saw last year and had success with. Sean Ryan not being a starter, but you could start five guys who you saw last year and had success with. I would imagine the quarterback, he's not in year two, guys. He's in year five now, I think. So this isn't going to be one of those deals where he has a sophomore slump, right? And now his receivers are going to have a year under their belt of understanding and communicating how they want routes run. Are they seeing the same thing Jordan's seeing? And they were good last year. So, you know, I think that competition, and who's going to be the alpha in that room? Because last year we went into the room thinking like, okay, is it Dotson or Dobbs or Watson? And it wasn't. That it's a no. You know, it's so many of those other guys in different moments. And so who's going to fight to be that go-to? Or who are the two guys that you're going to line up and say, I got to throw to these guys every time? Is that even a thing? Is it going to be receptions by committee? Like, there's so many questions to answer in that room because they're so good. And I think that's exciting, but it's also, it's going to propel those guys. There's going to be four guys that get remarkably better because otherwise they're not competing. O-line depth. Oh, here you go. What are realistic expectations for Lucas Van Ness in his second season, assuming he's relatively healthy? So this one's tough for me because even when he was drafted, you watch his college tape and you go, okay, there's some athleticism there, certainly. There's a motor there. He's an Iowa product. I like all of that. But as far as what about him physically or from a technique or movement standpoint, does he put fear into my heart as a person who has to block him from a pass rush standpoint or a run game standpoint? And I don't have a great answer. And so I think he's going to have to take a really big jump as far as he does a good job with attacking inside hand and stabbing. Now, how fast can I work off that? How fluid am I flipping my hips so I can maybe have some more moves that help me win closer to the hip and armpit of the tackle? Being in a three-point stance, if they allow him to be, is going to be better for him than being in a two-point. We saw that in college. It's absolutely true. Better get off, better leverage, better power. So I think that is going to be a big deal. Having said that, he's not a starting caliber player on this defense, and so he's a rotational guy. So again, not his fault, but you did bring a first-round high draft pick. You brought in a guy that's not going to be a starter in year two. That's, you know, barring injury to somebody else, that I think that's difficult. Have we seen the best of Josh Myers? And if so, is he the starting center for Green Bay all next year? What a great question. What a great question. I think the short answer is I don't think we've seen the best of him. I think that he dipped when they got a new line coach. He was better last year. I think he's going to keep, you know, you have to know these guys and I don't know him. I mean, you have to have sit down and go like, I want to know what kind of guy you are. Are you the kind of guy who's just like, man, I want to be all pro and I'm going to do everything to be all pro? Or am I a guy who's like, I'm an Ohio State kid. I've had a good career so far. There's been some ups and downs, but I'm managing. You know, like the perspective is different. It could be this, you know, you say the first thing and it's like, okay, I want to invest in this guy. You say the second thing and it's like, I've heard this story before. I just don't know who he is. I've never sat down and had that conversation with him. But if he's a guy that's desperate, I want to be an all pro. I want to be considered the top of my position. I'm willing to put the work in, not just lip service. Then yeah, I think I still think there's a really high ceiling on him. And honestly, quite frankly, we saw it. I did some film on him maybe a month ago. But he does have some good things. It's just his limitation is still with his initial footwork, and he hasn't fixed it in 3 years. Last one. I think it really comes down to whether so many 2023 surprises can continue success in 2024, kind of allow the young talent to avoid a sophomore slump. It's true. We just talked about that with the wide receivers. I don't think you have an issue there. I think you're injecting some new blood into the defense. I think you're going to get a starter at linebacker. You're going to get two new starters at safety. Stokes is coming off an injury. Wyatt's going to be into his third year now, so you expect a big jump in production from him. Comes in shape, comes in maybe ready to play with great leverage from snap number one. And you really got something there. You know, I think Kenny's still in his prime. Certainly, Rashawn Gary is looking to, I would imagine, have a big year after coming off the injury last year and being, you know, productive. But maybe, you know, I'm sure he left some meat on the bone that he wants to get back. Preston continuing to be kind of a very, very reliable player. And then you have your Lucas Van Ness. You have your Ed Barry. You have these guys that are, you know, potentially going to have, you know, I always look at, you know, quite frankly, you look at the defensive line position, you look at Carl Brooks, and you think, well, he was pretty good last year. What's an offseason going to do for a guy like that? Is he potentially an 8 to 10 sack guy in nickel situations? You know, it's not out of the realm of possibility. The way he played last year, he's got a nose for the football. So really excited about, I think, a lot of these things. And there's so much to be, this is the fun part about the offseason. There's so much to be answered. And certainly these guys are taking a hard look at it right now. I really am interested to see how that NFLPA thing is addressed. I do think there's a benefit for both sides. I do think that the coaches will initially go, I want to work with them more. But when they look at it just from a preparation standpoint, being so far into the playbook by day one of training camp just seems fantastic because, you know, I think I said this, if I didn't say this before, mini camps, you're installing. Day one of training camp, you're reinstalling. Now, it might be faster, but you're still wasting time as opposed to just diving right in. So think about how much more productive you are from a film session standpoint if you don't have to do that for the first week of practice. Just right there, it seems like it's worth the time. All right, guys, first time we've never done no film, and I'm like super uncomfortable with it, and I know everyone's going to hate me for it because I think a lot of people watch this because of the film. But I can either pull up some old tape and go down memory lane. I can pull up some other guys. You know, if you have ideas, if you want me to break down something, let me know. It's just right now, it seems like, I don't know. Just seems like watching tape right now is outside of the OT. I can't get excited about like watching guys in pillow pads. Just can't do it. All right. Find me at MikeWall68. Hey, thanks to Bet Online, of course, our sponsor. Find us on the Believe Network. MikeWall68 on X. Process to Perform. Process to Perform channel on YouTube. Have a great weekend.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, didn't see that coming, and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.